Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today on the program, we're speaking with Shiva Ramnarayan, a seasoned financial executive and founder of Mobius Consulting Panama, who has dedicated his 30-year career to transforming financial operations and combating what he calls insert routine hidden corruption in both corporate and government sectors. And Mr. Ramnarayan, we thank you for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks very much, Eric. Great to be here and looking forward to it.
I am as well. I know that there's a lot of information here folks need to hear about. So let's get underway here today. I understand that your departure from your CFO role at TSTT, better known as Telecommunication Services of Trinidad and Tobago, was executed under a parachute clause, resulting in termination without cause after all payouts and benefits were satisfied. Was your exit connected to your discoveries of significant corruption within TSTT? And if you would, detail the specific corrupt practices you identified and explain when you first realized the full extent of these issues. I'm sure that would be some interesting details to roll things out here today.
Excellent question. Glad to do so. In my first 2 weeks at TSTT, I quickly noticed that some irregular practices had become the norm. For instance, I discovered that TSTT was still paying for rental of ambulances, a practice that had been in place for decades, even though TSTT used private clinics. These clinics used their own ambulances. So there was no documentation or clear rationale for this type of rental expense, which clearly pointed to unnecessary waste and undue influence from a vendor influence. Or certain vendor influence. Another major red flag in the first 2 weeks was a complicated foreign exchange transaction involving a key vendor and a third-party supplier for equipment. I took the initiative to request all the necessary documentation. And during that review, I found a calculation error that resulted in an overcharge of $14 million. When I raised the issue of the overcharge, it caused significant uproar among those involved. I later spoke confidentially with the audit chairman, who was extremely astounded by the discrepancy and warned me to proceed with caution. I think his advice was sound. He cited that people have been killed for far less. So it was evident that the corrupt practices were deeply embedded within the company and many individuals benefited from maintaining that status quo. So your question is pretty directional, because by challenging these practices that I uncovered in the first 2 weeks, I ultimately eliminated about $160 million in annualized wastage. Many of the vendors whose deals I questioned and whose revenue streams I cut off began to mobilize against me. They influenced board members, they influenced key individuals within TSTT. And remember, this wasn't just about one or two transactions. This was about dismantling a system of normalized waste and abuse that has been entrenched for decades and disrupting an entire way of life for a network of individuals and interests. So specific to your question, when people ask whether uncovering this significant corruption was connected to my termination under the parachute clause, as you mentioned, it's hard not to draw that conclusion.
Yeah, I bet not. It certainly makes a lot of sense, and I totally agree with you. Now, here's a question for you. What early warning signs should business leaders watch out for when they might indicate corruption or wasteful spending in their organizations? I'm sure you have some experience in that.
Yeah, good question again. Yeah, and in a telecom sector, and really in any industry, it's important to really look for those early warning signs through the lens of industry-specific benchmarks. When corrupt transactions become institutionalized, they blend into the normal financial operations of the company. That makes them hard to spot just by looking at numbers in isolation. But when you benchmark your organization practices and spending patterns against the company's and recognized best practices, it becomes easier to identify where excessive spending or unusual costs is occurring. This is typically the first real sign when you're spending significantly more than your peers for similar services or output, and it's really time to start asking tough questions.
No doubt about that. Now, I wanted to build on the corrupt practices that you uncovered. You were able to save TSTT, like you mentioned earlier, approximately $160 million in non-labor-related unoptimized wastage. Walk us through how you approached uncovering these issues in a structured way, if you have a moment, and what specific strategies or methods did you find most effective in identifying and tackling the wasteful spending?
Absolutely. So when I first stepped into the role, my approach was structured, but also grounded in curiosity and skepticism, like any proper CFO should be. I didn't go in assuming everything was wrong. But Eric, I also didn't go in assuming everything was right. I started with a broad sweep of historical expenditure, looking for high-cost items that lacked clarity or justification. And my goal was to find patterns, not just anomalies. The key strategy I used was layering financial analysis with operational logic. I think you just don't just look at numbers. You ask questions about necessity and effectiveness of the spend. One of the first things I did was benchmark TSCT's major expense categories against similar-sized telecoms. When something stood out, like paying 4 or 5 times more than market rate or maintaining contracts for service no longer in use, that's when you dig deeper. So in many cases, the waste was so normalized that it appeared embedded in routine monthly operations. And one of the things as well is that you look for additional ways in which to do things, like certification methods, which involves asking individuals who are responsible to certify that this is in fact a valid transaction. And once you do that, you tend to get to the truth a lot faster. So by doing that, you not only strengthen governance, but also dilute some of the risk that you have in the organization.
Certainly some good information right there for sure. I was going to ask you some of those questions, but you definitely answered those. Now, it's now well established also that Stuart Young, as Minister of National Security, made the decision to halt substantial payments on TSTT surveillance contract in 2018, despite the service still being delivered in your recollection. Was there ever any discussion or pressure to sell that government debt to a related party? And given the opposition's repeated assertions about conflicts of interest between Stuart Young and his brother Angus Young, who heads NCB Global, did any of this impact your role or decisions during your time at TSTT? I'd be curious on that.
Yeah. Well, just to sort of recap that entire transaction, in January 2019, Stuart Young publicly announced that the government would not be renewing the surveillance contract you alluded to with TSTT. And most persons, as you mentioned, were fully aware that payments for those contracted services had already stopped in 2018, despite TSTT was still required to continue delivery of that service. Specific to your question, by around, I think it was 2020 or 2021, I was contacted regarding the possibility of selling the outstanding debt tied to that contract. Several members of management and even board members asked whether I would consider offloading that debt. What made the situation especially troubling was the proposed buyer, as you mentioned, was NCB Global Finance, obviously a conflict of interest that could be construed as glaring issue. I made it very clear that I would not entertain such a sale. This was a legitimate government contract, and we were fully within our rights to collect the money owed. There was absolutely no reason to sell that receivable, suggesting that a state-owned enterprise should sell government debt to an alleged connected entity to the minister was, in my view, not an appropriate course of action. By December 2023, the debt had climbed to approximately $750 million, highlighting not only the scale of the debt, but also the severity of the underlying issue that you are questioning.
Now, speaking of contracts, what specific contract clauses would you recommend to protect government companies from non-payment tactics? Touch on that.
Yeah. Well, for government-owned companies, especially in a case like TSCT, where government owns 51% stake in a company, protecting against non-payment goes beyond inserting contract clauses, Eric. Yes, you can insert, clearly defined payment milestones, penalty clauses, termination right, dispute resolution mechanisms, etc. But your bigger problem is many state-owned enterprises, they over-procure without having the necessary funding in place, and payments are delayed or never made. This leads to a significant debt piling up across the board for the government and for those state enterprises like TSTT. So the systemic issue is not about addressing the causes, but it's about addressing appropriate funding, which needs to be identified and locked in before services are procured, not after. And the onus not only falls on the government, but on a service provider like TSTT. Before you sign such an agreement, you have to be fully aware that the client, in this case the government, can afford and intends to pay. Affordability shouldn't just be a criterion for revenue recognition. It should be a requirement before entering into a contract.
Really some good advice there and insight as well. We're speaking with Mr. Shiva Ramnarayan, a seasoned financial executive and founder of Mobius Consulting Panama, which develops digital solutions and governance processes designed to uncover and eliminate inert hidden corruption here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on after exposing these corrupt practices at the Joint Select Committee and what you described earlier, along with the various cases, conflict of interest, you faced significant backlash that ultimately led to your termination. Now, what evidence suggests your firing was politically motivated rather than performance-based, and how did officials respond when you began challenging these entrenched interests?
Quite an interesting question, I must say. From a performance standpoint, there was no question about my contribution. I was the highest rated executive in my organization, consistently acknowledged by the CEO in front of the executive leadership team. My track record spoke for itself. We kept the company operational as a going concern thanks to the number of critical initiatives I led during an extremely challenging period. As for the backlash itself, it was intense. Vendors who had been benefiting from entrenched arrangements for 15 to 20 years, vendors who had effectively built empires of the company began to mobilize once their streams of income were disrupted. They were joined by board members and internal allies within TSTT with vested interests in maintaining those relationships. What followed was a coordinated effort to discredit the cost-cutting and reform measures that I was introducing, including attempts to frame them as reckless and harmful, and that's very important to note. So while it wasn't political in the conventional sense, Eric, it was very much driven by politically aligned vendors working with individuals inside and out of TSTT that was politically aligned. These alliances were rooted in self-interest, ultimately led to my termination for no reason.
Here's a question for you, and I'm sure listeners would love to hear your input on this. How can professionals build networks of ethical allies within and outside their organization as protection?
Yeah, this is a tough one. In government agencies or state-owned enterprises like TSCT, building a network of ethical allies is incredibly difficult because the leadership structure is often politically imposed by the government. So both the management and the board are politically imposed into the organization. So going against the grain comes with real risk. If you're seen as a threat or misaligned with their agenda, they'll often find a way to push you out, whether by uncovering a so-called smoking gun or manufacturing a reason for your exit. So that's a very tough question. In my case, performance wasn't an issue. I was the highest rated executive. That made it difficult for them to justify my removal directly. But when they decided to promote the lowest performing executive, someone who was still on extended probation, to the highest leadership role, they were faced with a decision. Would I, as CFO, continue to support a management team I knew was unqualified and incapable? So they understood the answer to that, and that became the catalyst. So in environments like that, building ethical alliances required not just strategy. It requires courage, awareness of the power structure, and readiness to stand alone.
Yeah, thanks for your thoughts and feedback on that. Helpful as well. Now, drawing from your experiences at TSTT and your current work with Mobius Consulting, you're now developing governance and AI-driven solutions to detect corruption patterns. How can technology help identify and prevent the kind of politically protected corruption that led to your dismissal, and what systems might have protected you?
Love this question. Drawing from my experience at TSTT and now through my work with Mobius, I have seen firsthand how politically protected corruption thrives in environments where oversight is weak and governance is based on personalities rather than systems. One of the ways we tried to address this at TSTT was by establishing an expenditure review committee. I'm passionate about this. A group of independent experts from across the organization who were not tied to any vendor relationships. This was critical because it shifted the focus from one individual, like myself, to a structure and objective decision-making body. It provides both a buffer and credibility in pushing back against questionable spending and vendor arrangements. Give me some latitude here, Eric, because I'm really excited about this question. Now, with the advancement of AI-driven governance tool, we're taking that even further at Mobius. AI has the unique ability to remove emotion, politics, and personal bias from the review process. It asks a difficult question, often intrusive questions like, why this vendor? Is the service still under warranty? Do we need this at all? Can this price increase be justified? These are questions that, when asked by a person like myself, can come across as confrontational. But when asked by a system or software, AI machine learning, it is seen now as part of due process. So AI allows for consistent application of standard across all spending. And I think this works extremely well. Most importantly, it creates a transparent audit trail that holds everyone accountable. So had a system like this existed at TSDT, not only would many of the entrenched corrupt practices or inert routine hidden corruption have been flagged early, but I would also would not have had to stand alone in raising these issues. Technology and structured governance would have spoken for themselves, making it harder to retaliate against individuals doing the right thing and easy to expose those individuals doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, for sure on that. Technology would have been a big help. Now, here's a follow-up question on that. What specific data points or patterns should companies monitor to catch potential wasteful spending before it becomes systemic?
Good. This is an important question. So companies need to monitor patterns, not just individual transactions. Big mistake. No, that's pervasive. Key data points include recurring vendor payments. Look for repeat payments to the same vendor with no competitive tendering or renegotiation. Look for late-stage contract renewals. So contracts that are consistently renewed just before expiry, leaving no room for due diligence, are often serious red flags. Off-market pricing trends. Compare prices against industry benchmarks. I found this to be extremely useful. If you're paying above market rate without clear justification, something is wrong. And then unusual payment terms or frequency changes. So sudden shifts in how often a vendor is paid or in the amounts should also trigger some amount of scrutiny. And department level spend concentration. Monitor if one department is repeatedly awarding contracts to a small familiar group of vendors. These are just some of the many type of sort of patterns that you look for.
And certainly some good advice from your experience. We can't thank you enough for spending a moment with us here today to give us heads up on how to defend ourselves against corruption, especially in your case. You've got quite a story to tell, and we thank you for joining us here today to help us out and help our listeners out from this day moving forward in these similar regards. Before you go, in conclusion, any closing thoughts, a final word, anything else you'd like to make mention of or bring to our attention as we conclude here today?
I would say that, you know, focus on some of the things that are easily solvable. Do not succumb to some of the pressures within a politically charged environment. And you'll see that things do change. You know, meritocracy does exist, and performance-based management is something we should all strive for. And looking at the future, AI machine learning will lend considerably to some of the challenges we face today. And inert hidden routine corruption, it is pervasive. It is something that we should look at, and we should all attempt to resolve in an era or a time in 2025 when we see reducing revenue streams and decrementing revenues. Cost needs to be a key focus, and optimizing wastage needs to be a critical focus.
Certainly the perfect place to conclude here today. I'm sure listeners would like to know where they could connect with you and get more information on Mobius. Where can they get all the details online?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website at mobius-solutions.com. I will leave my contact information with you, Eric, after this call. I will make sure that we are easily accessible.
Sounds good to me. And of course, listeners, draw your attention to the show notes where you can pick up this link and other details and contact details as well. Mr. Ramnarayan, all the best. And again, we thank you for your time and for joining us here today on EPN.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Again, we've been speaking with Mr. Shiva Ramnarayan, a seasoned financial executive and founder of Mobius Consulting Panama, which develops digital solutions and governance processes designed to uncover and eliminate inner hidden corruption. And for all the details, visit Mobius-Solutions.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app or your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.